Well, this morning's been nothing if not eclectic, and that's one of the attractions of this science. So what I'd like to do is talk about, it's a value judgment, but the imperative of a long-term soil experiments in our time. Somehow or another, I've been in the right or the wrong place, and I've gotten sucked in to the International Commission of Stratigraphy's Working Group on the Anthropocene. And there are many different people, but this is initiated by Paul Crutzen and Gene Sturmer. About 2000, it's a 21st century concept in its description. Perhaps best known in Crutzen's one-pager in Nature. In any event, my hypothesis is that the Anthropocene is transforming not only Earth systems, but as it plays itself out across not only the sciences, but also the humanities, our disciplines are being stressed and rethought, and I think also governmental agencies as well are being stressed. This is not a comfortable idea that the planet has turned from a natural to a human natural system. So the point of the talk is that in our times it's propagated into pedology, into a new model of soil, this human natural body, this human natural system, quite unlike Dukkha Shyap's idea. It requires new approaches for study. And one of those new approaches, just one of those new approaches, is field experiments that test the variety of ways that humans force the soil systems. So it can be confidently stated that the majority of contemporary soils are undergoing human changes, and there's a long list, and we all know these forcings, or most of them anyway. They're in our backyards, and it's quite ironic that this is the frontier. Our frontier is in our backyard in many cases. Most of the long-term experiments are on this front line. They've tested since the early 1880s or the early 1800s cultivated or managed lands for agricultural crops. But in any event, a wide variety of ways we're pushing the soil system. Speaking personally, I remember reading Rudy Dudal's paper in 2002, only 12 years ago for me, that really shocked me. It grabbed me. And Rudy had an ability of writing in short phrases, a way to catch you. In any event, he simply asked, "Are we a soil-forming factor short?" Of course, we've all thought and taught humans as part of the biological equation, but as a part of the biology of the soil-forming factor equation. But it's just not a comfortable fit. There's culture, there's intention, there's awareness that human beings have that I won't dispute that dogs have some awareness, but there's definitely a difference, and we haven't incorporated humanity into that genetic model very well, and yet we need to become a fully fledged soil forming factor, a forming factor, an integral part of genesis, much more than just one that upsets or disturbs or pushes over the remarkable natural system like on the right. But going back into the literature a little bit, this wasn't only Rudy's idea. A whole number of people, Bidwell, Hull, Bruno Yaron, Jenny and Amundsen had a nice, very difficult 1991 paper in which they struggled to bring humanity into the state equation. But I very much like Yalan's 1966 paper, except for the semantic term that he used, metapedogenesis. It is descriptive, but in any event, that's Dan on Facebook 2 years before he died. But in any event, he was the second Dukeshaya Prize winner, and a number of us nominated him. And one of the main reasons that I think his candidacy went forward was because he made a statement, the human natural soil model, or we made the statement in our letters, that the human natural soil model was as important to the development of pedology as the natural body model of Hilgard and Dukeshaya in the 19th century. So this is a little bit more about this anthro soil model. It's a dynamic system affected by both natural and human forcings. It's historically being accrued in the system. Soil is a palimpsest, if nothing else. And a palimpsest is a beautiful metaphor for a soil. It is an archaic way in which we as human beings, before the widespread use of paper, recorded written documents, where we would write it on an animal hide and then erase it and then write on top of it and then erase it. And the most famous, and so this is, you imagine the soil system being accruing over time and also being erased over time, the various features that do develop as soils' residence times build up to hundreds and thousands and even up to a million years or more. So the palimpsest is a great image, and the human being in all of our activities is the contemporary writer, so to speak, and eraser. But in any event, given human forest soil changes, field experiments are needed to test the wide variety of ways we're influencing soils' behavior, to test resilience, threshold, hysteresis, in response to our activities. So look at this metaphor. This is soil organic carbon change. And I've used Schlesinger's natural pedogenesis change. This deserves a little bit of explanation. But the units on the y-axis are changing soil organic carbon per year. And it depends on the age of the soil system here involved. So 10,000 years ago, there was a glacial retreat that began, and soil was exposed, and the carbon accrued over that 10,000 years, and so it's all divided by 10,000 years. So, for example, at 2,500 years, there's a little dot in Schlesinger's 1991 Nature paper, and it was a volcanic ejecta. The tuff came down, formed soil over 2,500 years. It's all divided by two, so it's a mean annual increment. It's not the first 10 years of those soil formations. So it's a bit mixing the units when we look at the human anthropedogenesis changes. But I think it's still directly relevant to our problem, and it's how do we quantify these trajectories that soils are on when we add manure or cover crops or cultivate in various ways or regrow forests or convert a forest to a urban landscape. So how do we begin to quantify that? So there's lots of experiments. We've heard the most ultimate of reductionist experiments 2 talks ago by Sharon Billings. I think it had 1 microbial species, did it not? No, I mean, you're in there in the laboratory here, right? Yes, you're bold. Okay, yeah, and 1 substrate too, 1 compound. But in any event, there's a whole variety of ways we can look at how the system is working and accelerating in its changes. Space for time is a very common way, chronosequence studies, and of course models. But I'd like to maintain there's a special role for long-term field experiments that are too few used and too often lost. But since 2004, starting in a graduate class, we began to inventory long-term soil experiments. And the first set of experiments was inherited from the SOMNET program, which is Soil Organic Matter Network, run by Peter Smith and Joe Smith and a variety of people basically based in Rothamsted. They handed that over to my class, and we started to build on top of it. I got a research coordination network from NSF. I got some money from Nancy Cavallaro. She's not here. But in any event, we cobbled together a website that basically allowed people to add metadata to about their experiment. And we had workshops with some of those people or with scientists who could get excited about working in these special places, these special long-term field experiments that in most cases start by accident or start by some individual's enthusiasm, like Kirsten Hofmachl gets excited about Iowa and decides to finally build a long-term soil experiment. There's lots of these that are being created today. It's really quite remarkable. In one workshop, Ishaku Amapu, my all-time favorite name, wish I had that name, from northern Nigeria, he at the end of the workshop, he says, "We need to make long-term soil experiments work harder." And I've never forgotten that little truth. He gave a talk in which he had his title slide, and then it said his authors were others and Ishaku Amapu. And these experiments can get handed down generation after generation, and I thought that's how we in this little community of LTSEs we should all start. Others and Sharon Billings, or others and Dan Richter, yeah. In any event, this is where we are today, or this is where we were up to 2013, and our publicly available Drupal version got so old that I had to take it down. But in any event, we built it up to 250 studies. A lot of these places are individually run and are run by no budget at all, just kept going. And so an individual who runs one of these sites is more often than not very enthusiastic to fill out a little form and become part of a community. It's really quite incredible. Unfortunately, the southernmost study of Diana Walls is not on this map. You know, the place where she has found four nematode species or something. Well, the distribution here is quite incredible, this is by no means complete either. This is an open-ended survey, so what I'd like to do is just look at these briefly in terms of their metadata to see what kind of glasses we have, because in a lot of cases, results from these long-term studies get into our textbooks and give us the models that we use to think about the soil system. So it's not surprising that the temperate zone has nearly 80% of the studies, at least in our inventory, which we think is a pretty good sample. And the tropics and the boreal zone, boy, the boreal zone is very important, to say the least, at this time. Let's see here. What kind of land uses are represented? It's not surprising 80% are arable, but there are, out of 250, there's 25 or 30 forestry studies, so that that's a pretty interesting distribution. It just opens up the opportunity for urban soils people to do a few things, that's for sure. Lots of land uses that are not really well represented in these studies. Then continentally, this was interesting, and one of the surprises was Asia. And it's the developing countries of Asia who have kept Green Revolution rice experiments going. And it's probably of any of the crops, the major grain crops, the most integrated sub-network out there. Compared to corn, wheat, any kind of forestry soil work, the intensively managed rice experiments across southern Asia are really quite impressive. Huge body of literature, much of it aimed at trying to spot yield declines. So that was quite a nice surprise. They are looking to, many of those scientists are looking to reformulate their experiments in a new generation of rice studies. Then there's huge orders, very important orders. Oxisols, erythrosols, histosols, gelosols have hardly any studies, and yet very important issues about soil change need to be developed. And then if you look at the depth at which these studies are sampled, you know, it's really quite a superficial view that we are getting. Most of the Rothamsted studies are based on a 23-centimeter deep sampler that Sir Laws developed. They have gone deeper with time, but it's really quite a superficial view of the whole soil system that we have data for. And then last but not least are the archives. Many of these studies have kept samples through time. But it is incredible. Out of 250 studies, there are 6 archives over 100 years in age. There's less than 15 that are between 50 and 100. How some of these are incredibly valuable, to say the least. So there's much to learn about long-term soil experiments, and there's lots of opportunities to struggle to put one out and to keep them going through time, much less to hand them to the next generation. So there's little data, just to summarize here, little data below 30 centimeters. Most of the observations are coming from the important agro systems, but that leaves a lot of forest, grassland, wetland systems, urban systems with important questions not well answered. So we've got an elementary understanding of soil change, to say the least, compared to what is required or what would be useful in the next few decades. Well, the next generation of LTSEs, I can thank the International Soil Carbon Network for allowing me to take the Drupal-based data set into the ISCN database. And so you can go into the ISCN to access the long-term soil experimental data. And we've also evaluated these studies and put them into tiers, like which ones are the really most important ones? Those are tier one. So our tier system, we talked about this, we had fun talking about this. So tier one is the highest quality or the longest, I should say, the longest duration study. If you have an A, that means you have an archive associated, a sample archive. So tier one are over 40 years old, tier two are 20 to 40, tier three are less than 20 years or the LTSE has been terminated. There are some very important studies that are terminated that still have their archives available, including Yurimaguas in Peru, and there's another tropical one in South Africa that's unfortunately terminated. But you go onto this map, and the ISCS people allow you to look at the tip of the iceberg of the metadata by just hovering over this. So I've gone to one of Ishaku's studies in Nigeria, which is a 1971 study. It's still ongoing. It's a Tier 1A. It means it has soil archives. So it's an ultisol, arable ultisol, and that's the tip of the iceberg. There are 60 questions of metadata that are answered. So we've written a proposal. We've got some funding for planning a sampling of about 30, let's sample 30 of these tier 1 and 2 agricultural LTSEs. And what's the hypothesis? I can think of one or two very important hypotheses, that these set of studies allow us to investigate. And so our little group discussion settled on, why not test cumulative effects of nitrogen, you know, over the decades, and is added to soils, and organic matter also is added to soils. And we know something about the reactions here, and we're very concerned about those reactions. But the cumulative effects that build up over 20, 30, 40, or very, very many more decades that are available to us, why not sample to 1 meter and do it in a way that's consistent across sites? And not only that, analyze the data in an interdisciplinary way, because we're pushing these systems biologically, chemically, and physically. And if you're at all interested in this, I'd be more than happy to work with anyone. And in fact, hand it off. There's one word that's not in my vocabulary, okay, and that's retirement. But I know the reality when I look at my friends and we come to this meeting or other meetings year after year. Someday it'll come, but I'll be happy to hand this off to somebody. But I think it's a fundable sampling. It would lead someone to, disciplinarians amongst us, biologists, microbiologists, molecular biologists, all sorts of chemists. The physics tools are incredible. I think that there are more than enough opportunities among these long-term sites that they, not all of them will be welcoming, but many will be welcoming to be part of a future network. So thanks for your interest and attention.